Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, I'm happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. And today we're going to talk a little bit of both. I'm excited for a first-time guest on the show this afternoon. We're going to be joined by Ryan Smith. He's the new manager of the USU Eastern softball squad. He'll be replacing Brittany Richens, who spent the last 2 years at the helm to get the program rolling. Coach Smith is joining USU Eastern's program after spending roughly 5 or 6 years in Hurricane, coaching Hurricane High School. I'm looking forward to this conversation today. We're also going to be joined with Coach Smith, a sophomore on this year's softball team. McKenna Gubanich is going to join us as well. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be next segment during our local sports portion of the show. Plus, we'll give you the local sports recap. The Carbondale golf team just continuing to dominate the competition, literally dominating the competition. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Right now, I want to dive into some of the headlines in the NFL, and we'll tackle these particular storylines a little bit later on. We'll start with the Seattle Seahawks. Earl Thomas has ended his holdout, and the Seahawks have turned down a second-round pick offer from the Dallas Cowboys. Earl Thomas, an all-pro safety, actually reported to the Seahawks today. Pete Carroll said Thomas went through a walkthrough Wednesday morning, practice in the afternoon. He did not say if he would start Sunday's game against the Denver Broncos, saying it's too early to tell as the Seahawks need to gauge his conditioning, given that he's been away from the team all offseason. Carroll wouldn't say if the team is waiving the fines either, because when you skip minicamp and you skip training camp, typically there's some heavy fines that come along with that those particular decisions. Earl Thomas addressed the situation on his Instagram account. I'll read it for you. Quote, "I worked my whole life for this. I've never let my teammates, city, or fans down as long as I have lived, and I don't plan on starting this weekend. With that being said, the disrespect has been well noted and will not be forgotten. Father Time may have an undefeated record, but best believe I plan on taking him into triple overtime when it comes to my career." That's what Earl Thomas put on his Instagram page earlier today. Pete Carroll was asked if a trade was still possible, and he responded with, "He's a Seahawk." Thomas is only 29 years old, so the talk of Father Time, I get it, 29, it's not ancient though. This guy's still got some football left to be played. And I'm also quite surprised the Seahawks turned down a second-round draft pick for him. You take a look at some of the going rates, that's reasonable. I think you got to consider that if you're Seattle, especially the situation that they're in. Are we writing off the Seahawks? Yesterday, we were talking about the NFC West when we had a conversation about the Cardinals. To me, it runs through LA. I think the Rams are the clear-cut favorite. A lot of people are high on San Francisco. I assume San Francisco will be the second best team in this division. And that means that Seattle and Arizona battle it out for third and fourth. Is that too much disrespect as far as Seattle goes? Should they be considered a serious division player? That's a fair conversation to have, I think. Now, while Earl Thomas has ended his holdout, Le'Veon Bell, he has not. Unlikely to play Sunday, and his agent is hitting at a longer absence. There's some, I guess, what should we say, weariness right now in the locker room in Pittsburgh as well. A lot of people are not happy with Le'Veon Bell. A lot of players are not happy with Le'Veon Bell. Barring any crazy development, he's not playing on Sunday. And according to ESPN, and according to a source, an agent hinted that Bell may be willing to wait out even longer to preserve his long-term health. Hasn't signed his $14.5 million franchise tag and will become a free agent in 2019 as long as he signs it by week 11. May not see Le'Veon Bell all season. I mean, technically, he could sign that franchise tag on the day before week 11 and he'll be a free agent next year. That's the way this works. This is the reason why I'm not picking the Steelers to win the AFC this year. This is something that is going to linger over this team. It's never going to unite a squad. A holdout could never unite a squad. Never. Never. He is making more money at $14.5 million. He is making more money than anyone on that offensive line for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That is blatant disrespect. And if he misses week one, week two, week three, I don't care. If he misses any week, there's no way this unites that team. This is going to be a problem for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's move over to Major League Baseball. We got about 23 games left in the regular season, some very tight races. Earlier today, one final already, the Boston Red Sox defeated the Atlanta Braves. For those of you who are keeping tabs on that Braves-Philly race, Brandon Phillips, that's a name from the blast, a blast from the past is what we could say. That's a name from a few years back when he was an all-star for the Cincinnati Reds. Walk-off style, Brandon Phillips.
The pitch. Swinging a long drive to left, way back. Can you believe this? Brandon Phillips has homered. The Red Sox lead it 9-8.
Red Sox top the Braves 9-8. Another final from earlier today, the Royals falling to the Cleveland Indians 3-1. Corey Kluber gets the win on the mound for the Indians. Plenty of baseball to get excited about. 5 o'clock hour, we get the Dodgers and the Mets. Big game because the Dodgers a half game back of the Colorado Rockies at the top of the NL West, but the Dodgers are in fact closing in on the St. Louis Cardinals, a game out of the wild card spot. The Cardinals will take on the Washington Nationals at 5:05. Also in the 5 o'clock hour, the Reds will battle the Pirates. We get the Blue Jays playing host to the Tampa Bay Rays, and the Phillies will take on the Florida Marlins. 6 o'clock hour, the Chicago Cubs, two games up in the win column on the Milwaukee Brewers. Jose Quintana will take the ball tonight. Cubbies, Brewers, big matchup, 6 o'clock there. 6:05, we get the Angels and the Rangers. The Tigers will travel to meet the Chicago White Sox at 6:10. The World Series champion Houston Astros will take on the Minnesota Twins. 6:40, another monumental game, Giants-Rockies. Rookie Andrew Suarez is on the mound for the Giants. He's been a positive. We've talked about him with Bill Lasky a time or two. That's a problem for the Rockies tonight in Coors Field. I'm interested in this game. 8 o'clock hour tonight, we get the Yankees and the A's nightcap. It's the Orioles and the Mariners. That's a quick look at what is happening right now with the national and local sports front. We have plenty more coming up on Drive Time Sports. Local sports recap is coming your way. And again, we're going to be joined by Coach Smith and a member of the USU Eastern softball team in just a moment. Drive Time Sports live from the Auto Farm Studios on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin with the high school golf scene. And yesterday, the Carbon Dinos dominated the competition once again, this time at the Ranches, the home course for Providence Hall. Carbon finished with a team score of 319, easily besting second place Providence Hall, who shot a 357. Carbon was led by Nick Olson, who fired a 78, topping teammate Carson Martinez by one stroke, who finished with a 79. Caden Slavinsky and Brady Gagan both shot an 81. Carbon had a monumental lead already on Delta, but the Rabbits fired a 360, doubling Carbon's lead as they topped the Rabbits by 41 strokes. Only two region meets remain on the schedule. Carbon will travel to Canyon Hills Golf Course next week. That's the home site of JUAB. And then on September 18th, the Dinos will travel to Mesa Prep for the Fox Hollow Golf Course. And then they'll compete for the state championship tournament. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll have more on the Carbon Golf Squad in the coming days with Coach Brett Johnson. Now we stick with high school golf, but we move over to Emory High. And today the Spartans will travel to Manti's home course for another region meet, as the Spartans continue to power through what's been a season of ups and downs so far this year. Start time for today's meet is set for 11 a.m. We'll bring you the results as soon as they become available. Also scheduled today, the Emory High School cross-country team will travel on the road as they take on the Grand Red Devils in a Region 15 meet. And today's cross-country meet will continue the early portion of the schedule, and we'll also bring you those results as soon as they become available later on in the afternoon. We move over to high school soccer, and yesterday the Carbon Lady Dinos suffered their first loss of the Region 14 season, falling to the Delta Rabbits 4-1 on the road. Carbon fell in an early 3-0 hole at the end of the first half, and they battled even with Delta over the final half 1-1. The Rabbits scored 3 goals quickly and never let up. It was Savannah Nielsen who scored 3 goals, netting the hat trick for the Rabbits. Grace Broadbear found the back of the net once for Carbon. The Lady Dinos will have an opportunity to log one back in the win column when they return to the field next week to take on the Juab Wasps at home. Carbon is currently 4-1 in region play. Yesterday's loss brought an end to a 5-game winning streak. And today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we will be joined by new USU Eastern softball coach Ryan Smith. Coach Smith will join the program in its third year of existence. In fact, the Lady Eagles actually participated in fall ball action over the weekend. Today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, it'll be an opportunity to talk to Coach Smith a little bit about his history as he has coached in St. George over the last several seasons and where he sees the program moving. Again, that'll be today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, beginning at 4 p.m. on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
We're back on Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 a.m. live from the Auto Forum Studios. And now we're going to talk some local softball. USU Eastern recently making the announcement that Ryan Smith would take over as the new manager of the program, replacing Brittany Richens, who spent 2 years as head of the softball program. And we actually have Coach Smith in the studio right now, along with USU Eastern sophomore first baseman McKenna Gubanich. First off, guys, it's a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coach, let's start with the exciting news. First off, you are the new head coach at USU Eastern. You'll be leading the softball squad. I mean, that's exciting news to say the least.
Yes, I'm very excited, and we have a team that's can go and compete, and that's pretty rare as when you come in as a head coach that you can jump right in and compete. So
yeah, we're talking about a team that was 500 last year in conference play, and I mean, only the second year of existence. From this point, it seems like there's nowhere but up. One of the interesting things about junior college athletics is no matter what you have coming back, typically it's a big turnover because we're talking about 1, maybe 2 years at the absolute most.
Right. And that's what can make this tough. But the program has been building to be successful, and I think I have the opportunity to go and continue to build up. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about your experience. You're coming to Price after spending what, 5 years at Hurricane High School, right?
Right. I started there as assistant coach when my daughter decided she wanted to try softball, and we did that. We went through that, and then the last year, 2 years, I took over, and we had really good success there. I've also coached 5 years in club ball, with kind of just spread throughout the state.
So how did those 5 years of high school ball, I guess, ready you for the new task? Because, I mean, for the most part, these are high school girls. They're a year removed from high school. I know the level play is a little bit different, and, of course, the maturity has got to be different when you're competing against top-notch athletes in the conference that we're in. But at the same time, how did that prepare you?
I think the thing that I approached in high school is we got to play together as a team. Hurricane has not been a good program for many years, and to build them into just supporting each other, where nine is stronger than one or two. And yeah, college athletes are you know, I've got 18 good players, 19 good players, but we still come from different areas, and we have to play as one. As soon as we just play as one, we will be stronger.
Now, I know it's cliche, but it's so true. If we're talking baseball, if we're talking softball, you don't have to have the 9 best that have ever played the game out there, but it's working as one. It's a chain reaction on the field.
Right, and the thing that excites me is we already saw that this last weekend. We continue to get closer and closer as a team and fought as a team.
Yeah, fall ball is ongoing right now for you guys. Kind of gives you an opportunity to work out some of the kinks and at least get familiar with your girls. This is probably a great learning experience for you as well as the girls.
It is. I think I kind of told the girls that the couple losses that we have were mine, just because I didn't know the pitchers as well and was working through that, and then probably had some bad lineups, but they fought and did well. So
Do you rely on some of the girls to help you coach during this time to get familiar with what they're doing, or is it your program? How do you approach that?
I've told the girls over and over again, this is our team, and if they see something, I want them to bring it and approach it. And you know, that same thing. There's that saying that we is bigger than me, and they know things that I don't. They can bring things to the table that maybe I haven't seen, and then we can work on it and then use what I was hired for to lead that.
Well, let's go to McKenna here and talk about the difference. You've played now for two coaches at USU Eastern. What's the mindset like? How has it changed in a very short period of time, or has it at all?
It's definitely changed, but I think the biggest difference this year is that with Coach Smith, that we are a team, and even though it is kind of an individual sport and that everyone is kind of doing their own thing on the field, like when you're up to bat, it's just you and then the other team. But I think Coach Smith brings this mindset that we are all in this together and we have to work together in order to make it work. It's no one's individual sport, and that we all are a system that has to work together.
You guys do have a lot of returning sophomores. You're definitely not the only one on this year's team. When you commit to a program, you commit to play for a coach. So when you go through a coaching change, is that kind of nerve-wracking? I mean, what was your reaction to the initial news of a coaching change?
It was super nerve-wracking. I was worried that a lot of the freshmen wouldn't come because, you know, everything was kind of up in the air. At first, we heard that we didn't have a coach at all and they were looking. So that was super nerve-wracking because we were all wondering, like, will they find a coach? Will we even have a program this year? But I was super excited when we found out about Coach Smith because I kind of stalked him on Facebook, and it was kind of interesting because I realized that he had a daughter. He had daughters, and I like that. And I feel like it was more exciting for us, definitely, and we were all super pumped to have a new coach, even though it was nerve-wracking because, you know, it could be better, it could be worse than before, but I'm really enjoying it. So.
And you do have some familiar faces around as well, as Coach Smith has retained a couple of assistants from last year that you guys know.
Right.
And
right.
That probably eases makes the transition a little bit easier as well.
Definitely.
Coach, from this point on, if we can talk about your guys' schedule, I know you guys are playing some top-notch ball clubs, playing some D1 schools, right, over the next little while to help get you prepared. That's got to be fun from a coach's perspective. You have nothing to lose in fall ball, right?
That's right. It's we just get to go in and we get to see what we have, learn from it, and then I think the next thing that I've seen, my daughter went through this last year. I went and watched her play all these same teams, and you see the confidence build because this game doesn't change a whole lot from high school to junior college to D1. It's just more consistency, and when they go in and see that, it just gives them that much more confidence, but it also gives them that opportunity to move forward, and that's another goal of mine, is to get these girls that want to go play their third and fourth year.
Again, we're talking USU Eastern softball right now with Coach Ryan Smith, first-year head coach with the USU Eastern softball program, and also sophomore McKenna Gubanich. Coach, let's talk about your family. Get you familiar. Get the people in the county familiar with Coach Smith. Now, you have a wife, you have five kids, right? And you also have a daughter that plays softball at the JUCO level.
Right. She's over at Snow College. She's a sophomore over there. She's thought about transferring over. The coaches have all talked about it, you know, through the athletic director and everything. She's just kind of stuck on his, you know, friends and giving up on them, or coming here and being with dad and new friends. So, but I just let her know that she needs to go do what is best for her.
That's a fun storyline regardless. If she stays at Snow College, that's fun in a sense, isn't it, when you get to play against your daughter?
It is. I know how to pitch to her.
Yeah. You've been doing it for years. Yeah, you would definitely know. No, that's a cool storyline. That's a neat storyline. As far as your five children go and your wife, Melanie, have you guys made the transition, the full move to Price?
We haven't. My wife she teaches in high school special ed, and that's all kind of contract based, so there's probably not an opportunity for them to move right away, but most of my kids, my oldest daughter's in Pleasant Grove, my one that is at Snow is actually a twin, her twin sister's at Snow also, and then I've just got the two kids back home. So
that's great. Now, as McKenna was talking about, your family, man, that definitely makes it easier to coach girls at this level. At least I feel it is. I think McKenna kind of, you know, she talked about that. It is easier. I mean, it's like you go from having five kids to having, what, 23 kids now, right?
Right. No, I think my life's been built up for this. I started out in sales. got into recruiting of cells, then switched to become a mental health therapist, and then a coach. And I think a good coach has to do all of those things. They have to sell their girls. They have to do the recruiting. They have to kind of be there through some of that mental aspects, whether it's the stresses of missing home and anxiety and stress, or just having that right mental approach as they go up to bat or go up to pitch.
Another interesting note for those who are unaware, your brother Rob Smith is actually the manager at Emory High School. We have him on the show all the time. You guys look a little bit alike. I think you could probably pull the old switcheroo and nobody would really notice if you wanted to step in and coach high school baseball.
I've always told him I'm better looking, but it is close.
Coach, how familiar were you with USU Eastern before you actually accepted the job?
Quite a bit. Rob played here, and then I'm the oldest, but in between Rob and I have another brother that played for CEU, so
very familiar with it. So it's probably been an easy transition for you as well,
right? And then I've talked with Brittany quite a bit about our girls, and had sent some girls here and different things like that, and followed closely just this last 2 years.
That's great. I want to jump back over to McKenna here for a moment. What's your role been? Because you are a returning sophomore, so during fall ball, trying to get the new freshman acclimated to a new coach. Again, you mentioned it. They had agreed to play with a different coach, and now they have someone else here. So what's kind of been your role as a sophomore leader in some sense with this program?
Well, honestly, I think it's been pretty simple for the freshmen to adjust. Coach Smith is an awesome coach, and I know that everyone loves him. But also, like, as a sophomore, we just have been kind of trying to do group activities, you know, bring them and make them feel like they're at home. It's hard because when there's sophomores that are returning, it feels kind of clicky sometimes. And so I feel like that's the biggest thing that can set a team apart. But we've all been trying to all be leaders instead of just a few people and bring the entire team together.
Coach, let's get familiar with your style when you're out there on the diamond. What type of softball can we expect from you? Is it small ball? Is it aggressive? Is it based off, statistics, sabermetric style? What can we expect from you?
Yes, all those.
All above, okay.
We like the small ball. We practiced Thursday just a soft squeeze, and I wasn't sure if we were going to use it. We got up at the tournament, and we used it four times, and it was successful all four times. So I love doing that kind of stuff, and I love the statistics that matter, the ones that we can control, quality at bats, those sort of things versus other. But, you know, the biggest thing that I'm trying to get back in these girls' head is just to remember it's a game. Mm-hmm. And we have to have fun. You know, we put so much pressure on winning, and this is college, I've got to step up. But and yeah, those are important, but it's a game, and as soon as we get back to that game and then do those things, we will win.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me. One of the most fascinating things, at least in my eyes, with baseball, and one of the reasons it's my favorite sport, is because the strategy of it continues to advance day by day. And I know softball falls right in line with it.
Right. Yeah, no, that's it was interesting to me. A lot of these girls hadn't been taught a squeeze, and were nervous about it, and different things like that. And it's just being able to just give them a few more of the tools that, yeah, it comes from baseball. They're the same sport, mm-hmm. just have a few little differences, but that's what I love and why I've learned to love softball.
Between now and, let's say, the end of October, because you guys have 2 months of fall ball, it's a pretty rigid schedule for you guys, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, we have
Weber.
Four or five bigger schools. We play Weber State next week, then we go to Utah State, then we go to Southern Utah, and then over to Colorado Mesa, and then we get picking back up with a few 16U teams just to as a good recruiting tool, and to let those girls see, you know, that small little change of consistency, and we usually have a little bit of success right there with that. So it's something to build off in October as we get ready for, you know, the little winter break.
Definitely gives you a strong look at the freshmen as well. But anytime you change regime, you have a new leader, it's almost like a tryout all over again, even for the girls that you have on the team right now, right? And McKenna is shaking her head yes to that. I mean, the sophomores are trying out just as the freshmen are trying to earn your trust, I would assume.
It is. I've kind of mentioned, hey, you're all freshmen, but there is that advantage. I was able to watch a few games last year, and when I watch, I love watching the game and the statistics of it, and so I do know these girls a little bit, and and I'm excited. You know, I'm excited about our sophomores, but I think our freshmen are going to come in and push some of them, and it'll be interesting. And I'm going to give them all the opportunity to find out who the best team is on the field.
McKenna, I'm going to go back to you. No pressure. You're sitting right next to your new coach. What's your favorite characteristic about Coach Smith? Something that has really stood out to you in the short time that you've gotten to play for him?
I love that he's super team-oriented, but also when we do conditioning, he'll do it with us. So I feel like he's pushing us, but also pushing himself as a coach, and I really, really appreciate that about him.
That's pretty cool, Coach. That's neat that you kind of hold yourself to the same standard physically.
Well, I'm out of shape, so I figured it would be good, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it today. I'm pretty sore, but no, it is something that I like I said, we is bigger than me, and it's our team, and I need to be out there doing it with them. So,
Coach, we'll end with this. You're talking to the community, first-year softball coach. What do you want them to know about you and your program as you enter year one?
Wow. I want them to know that we're here to fight, that we're here to have fun, and we would love the community support in that. I think, you know, it is always easier to come out and fight and have fun and battle and battle for region when there's more fans out here. And that's the thing I would love is bring your families, bring, you know, especially your daughters that love softball, and help them to learn to love it more. And, you know, it's just that same thing. We talk about being one as a team, but we talk about being one as a school and being one as a community. And you're going to see us out there doing some service and stuff like that. So,
well, Coach, I definitely appreciate you taking out the time to come by today. Congratulations on being named head coach. McKenna, it was great to meet you and great to get you on air as well. So I really appreciate both of your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Again, that's Coach Ryan Smith and also sophomore McKenna Gubanich for the USU Eastern Eagles. Fall ball is in session right now, and it will continue to run until the end of October. And then in the spring, USU Eastern will start up their third year of existence in the Softball Scenic West Athletic Conference. We've got a break for just a moment. We are on the eve of NFL football. Tomorrow night here on KOAL, the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles will take on the Atlanta Falcons. We're going to talk NFL football when we return. Plus, we'll dibble in some college football as well. It's that time of the year. And plus, another quick check around the Major League Baseball ranks. It's all coming up on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, live from the Auto Farm Studios.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. Want to talk NFL football. Tomorrow, the season opens up right here on KOAL. I love our Thursday night football coverage. Westwood One provides just a lights-out production. And that'll be tomorrow night as the world champion Philadelphia Eagles take on the Atlanta Falcons. It's a terrific way to open up the season. I didn't believe in the Philadelphia Eagles last year. I didn't. And I don't know that I believe in them again this year. As crazy as that sounds. Exact odds for Super Bowl matchups. The Eagles actually are in the top two for the exact Super Bowl matchups. So if you were to walk in and look at the two most logical options for the Super Bowl, according to the odds makers, it would be the Steelers and the Eagles at plus 1,200. And I said on the show yesterday when I was talking with Travis that I like the Steelers to get to the Super Bowl out of the AFC, but I believe the Le'Veon Bell situation will be a detriment to this team throughout the year. Steelers-Eagles, odds for exact Super Bowl matchups, plus 1,200. Second best odds, Patriots versus Eagles, 2345, plus 2345. That would be the second exact Super Bowl matchup. Patriots-Rams. That is the third logical Super Bowl exact matchup. A distant fourth would be Green Bay and New England at 2750. The Rams and Patriots are at 2380, so a big drop off there. The Steelers have it all, and it is a make it or break it year for Mike Tomlin. When I talk about the best offense in the NFL, I take a look at arsenals. I think you have to take a look at the complete picture. Okay, depth. All of this matters, especially in the NFL season, especially right now in Pittsburgh. We're talking about Le'Veon Bell, not playing. We don't know if Le'Veon Bell is going to suit up before week 11. He will before week 11, so he can be a free agent. I think the Steelers have the best offense when Le'Veon Bell is on the field. Without him, it is questionable. I understand that there's a popular name in James Conner who's looked good as a backup, and the Steelers have had this situation before, be it D'Angelo Williams, whoever was in the backfield for Le'Veon Bell. They've had to go to the backup before, and they've been pretty good. I love what they have at wideout. Love Antonio Brown. Love Juju Smith-Schuster. But if they don't have Le'Veon Bell, I just don't know that I could put this team in my top three for offensive arsenals. Ben Roethlisberger was talking with the media, and he said, make no mistake about it, this team goes beyond one player.
This is a player that can help you guys win and ultimately get you far.
Yeah, he's one of the best in the business. So, you know, anytime you have a guy like that, you want him on the field with you.
Ben, how do you think this offense is without Le'Veon Bell? How do you think you can match up to perhaps what you did last year?
I think we're a very good offense. You know, football is the ultimate team sport. One person doesn't make or break you. So, you know, I'd like to say that the linemen are more important than any skill position player, including myself, on this team. So, you know, this offense is more than just one guy.
And do you go back and draw on what you went through when D'Angelo filled in a couple years ago and go back to some of the same things that worked and how you guys approached that?
Yeah, we did pretty good then too. And, you know, James is a year better than he was last year at this time. So I think we're all kind of excited for what he can bring to this offense and this team. And like I said, we've got a lot of weapons. We'd like to have him out there, but we've got guys that can make plays for us.
Ben Roethlisberger earlier today addressing the media in the Le'Veon Bell situation. Like I said, you got to look at complete and total arsenal. If I had to say the league's best offense right now, and again, I'm going off of the Super Bowl matchups, the logical picks from Vegas, the exact matches, I can't put Pittsburgh in my top three. And if I can't put them in my top three, I'm not picking them to go to the Super Bowl. To me, the best arsenal offensively in the NFL, I think it has to be New Orleans. I don't think there's an offense in the league that has fewer holes than what the Saints have. Now, that's if Drew Brees can continue on the path that he's on. He didn't show any signs of slowing over the last couple of seasons. Even if the team had to scale it back a little bit, he was still, if you're a fantasy football player, Drew Brees is fine at quarterback. You have your guy. Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram. When Ingram comes back, that's one of the best backfields in the NFL, if not the best backfield in the NFL. Mike Thomas, true number one receiver. And I don't know if the team has had that over the last 10 years. They have it in Mike Thomas. He's the real deal. Ted Ginn Jr. I've always been a little suspect as far as his hands. But the reason why Ted Ginn Jr. has been in the league for as long as he has without consistent hands has been because of his field. He can stretch, and that's exactly what he does. Tre'Quan Smith, another tool for Drew Brees. To me, I think it's the best offensive arsenal in the NFL. Number two, without Le'Veon Bell, I have to say number two is the Los Angeles Rams. I'd put the Rams at three if Bell was playing for Pittsburgh, but he's not right now. Sean McVay is an offensive juggernaut. This guy knows football inside and out. Terrific hire for the Rams. Todd Gurley, guy's the real deal. Best running back in the NFL. Should have been the MVP last season. Jared Goff looked great last year. The growth that he showed in just one season, astronomical. To me, second best arsenal in the NFL. The Rams have it loaded at tight end. Robert Woods, terrific second option at wideout. Cooper Kupp, the epitome of the slot. He is this next generation's Jordy Nelson. The Rams have the second best offensive arsenal because there's no Le'Veon Bell. Otherwise, I'm putting Pittsburgh at number one and probably the Rams at number three. But the Philadelphia Eagles would be there as well. I would put them right behind the Rams, pending Carson Wentz. I said last year I didn't trust Nick Foles. I thought the Eagles were done when Nick Foles was the full-time starter when we knew Carson Wentz was done. I still don't believe in Nick Foles. Doug Peterson's got some weapons. They're able to bring back Alshon Jeffery. When is Alshon going to return to full strength? That's the question. There's some question marks with Philadelphia. A lot of ifs. When the Eagles are healthy, They're a top three, top four, definitely top five arsenal in the NFL. But Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons are right on the outside looking in, neck and neck with the New England Patriots. When you had Kyle Shanahan, it was a no-brainer. Things are obviously different now with this unit, but they're still very good. Julio Jones, Devontae Freeman, Calvin Ridley was an excellent pick. Mohamed Sanu, to me, again, top five arsenal when Le'Veon Bell is not in the lineup. I think he means that much to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So when I take a look at the exact odds, if I had to place a bet, give me the Rams and the Patriots. Eagles, too many question marks. Steelers don't have Le'Veon Bell. Patriots, yeah, I can see them being the top six. And to me, the Rams are a top three offense. I know what they have defensively. Exact Super Bowl matchups, I'll take the Rams and Patriots on those odds. We've got a break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Back on Drive Time Sports, talked NFL football last segment. I'm going to bring in Travis Anderson. I want your take on this. Odds for the exact Super Bowl matchup. I don't like one. I don't like two. I'll go with three. I'll even go with four before I go with number one or number two. You haven't seen these odds yet. Talked about them last break, so I'm going to give them to you. Number one, Steelers-Eagles at plus 1,200.
No.
Patriots-Eagles at plus 2,345.
No.
Patriots-Rams at plus 2380.
That's my Super Bowl prediction.
Packers-Patriots at 2750.
I could see that one before the other two.
Yeah, so you're with me. You like three and four before one and two.
Yes.
We'll talk more NFL football tomorrow because that's when it gets real. Tomorrow right here on KOAL, 6 o'clock, we'll send you out for kickoff coverage as the Eagles take on the Falcons. Travis, Major League Baseball talk. We got to talk baseball. We didn't get to catch up with Bill Lasky because of the holiday on Monday. Bill took the day off. But we're getting down to it. Final 23 games of the season. How about your boy Brandon Phillips today, walk-off style, ending it for the Boston Red Sox? That was good to see. It was nice to see.
Did the Willie Mays style the home run. Glad for Brandon Phillips. He's worked his way back up to the big club. Has a chance to play on a playoff team. Has a chance to win a ring. And Brandon Phillips will always be one of my favorite players.
Yeah, he deserves it. He's a class act all the way. National League West is by far the most interesting divisional race at this point in time because we know that the Astros and the A's, we know they're getting in. And this is why I'm not talking about the AL West. We know that those two teams are getting in. National League East, Braves-Phillies is an interesting race. I still believe if the Phillies catch the Braves find a way to sneak into the playoffs, although they're not playing great baseball right now. They've lost three straight. Cubs-Brewers, I don't know. It's getting tight. Cubs-Brewers-Cardinals. Cubs hadn't lost since the Murphy deal. Now they've lost two straight. But really, when you take a look at the NL West, odds are the loser of the two losers in this division, and there's going to be two teams, don't make the postseason. Although the Dodgers are knocking on the door right now for a wild card spot, only one game back of the St. Louis Cardinals. But the big surprise, and if you would have told me this at the beginning of the year, I would have argued with you. There's no possible way. The Colorado Rockies were atop the NL West with 24 games to go in the season. And a lot of the reason I would have fought you on this, I have several Rocky fans in my family that I have to hear from every year. They love to give me a hard time because I'm a Dodger fan. You know that if you listen to the show enough. And every year it's the same concept with Rockies. Rocky fans live off Rocktober, the one year that they rallied late in the season and they went to the World Series and they got completely shook by Manny Ramirez and the Boston Red Sox. They were ran off the field. Rocky fans live for Rocktober. This is legit this year. I mean, this team is good, and they have a fun matchup tonight with the Giants. Suarez is on the mound, but the Rockies are playing good baseball right now. They've won four straight. Here's what seems different about this team. They're winning games that they have to win, and right now they get 20 games consecutively against the Giants, Diamondbacks, or Dodgers, and so far so good for this team. Is it time to view the Rockies as legit in the National League?
I think so. If you go up and down their lineup, you know, Charlie Blackmon, DJ LeMahieu, Nolan Arenado, Trevor Story, I mean, that's one through four is pretty legit in the National League, and the pitching is just good enough to get it done.
We haven't talked much NL MVP. To me, there's no doubt. It's Nolan Arenado is the MVP in the National League, right? I mean, Matt Kemp's a great story for the Dodgers. Comeback player of the year, no doubt. Arenado, however, is batting .299, 31 homers, 92 RBIs. He's got a .381 OBP. He leads the Rockies in pretty much every major statistical category outside of hits. That's Trevor Story with 155. It's a pretty good number. Arenado has 148.
Best third baseman in the league. Yeah, he's the MVP in the National League. And I love what Matt Kemp's done.
I love what Kemp has done as well. But I look at the numbers across the board for Nolan Arenado. I'm not going to say he's the reason. He is one of the main reasons that the Rockies are where they're sitting right now. Arenado's story. Cargo has been okay this year. As well, he's betting .286 on a one-year deal. Cargo's been okay for the Rockies. Blackman, DJ LeMahieu, and there is a DJ LeMahieu bobblehead sitting in the studio. If the Rockies win the NL West, I'm throwing this bobblehead in the garbage. Just throwing that out there right now.
You have to. If the Rockies win, trash it.
Okay, he's going in the garbage. This DJ LeMahieu bobblehead's going to go in the garbage if the Rockies win the NL West. No, it's a fun story. It really is. And I think that it's time that people really start considering the Rockies legit. I'll tell you why people don't view the Rockies as legit. It's because of the pitching rotation. That's the main reason. Kyle Freeland, John Gray, Tyler Anderson, Marquez, Chad Bettis.
It's been good enough.
Yeah, but is
but
that
how a, far can that take you?
Do you trust that lineup in the playoffs?
No, I will go with the established crew in Los Angeles.
Okay, and I'm going to throw one more at you. Let's say the NL West gets two teams into the playoffs, which is possible because the Dodgers are streaking and the Rockies are doing just enough to keep the Dodgers away from the top of the division. So it is possible. If the Rockies don't win the division, but they sneak in at the wild card, who would you throw out in a one-game playoff? Which pitcher are you rolling with your season on the line? See, if I look in Chicago, I know who that is, right? If I look at that in L.A., I know who that is.
If you go to Colorado, I don't know who that is.
If it's Atlanta, I know who it is. If it's Milwaukee, I know who it is.
But if you go to Colorado, you have no clue.
I don't know. And that's the problem with the Rockies. And it's something that they did not address at the trade deadline yet again. They spent a lot of money on Wade Davis to shore up that bullpen. I don't mind the bullpen for Colorado. It's fantastic. What does it take to get to the bullpen? That's the problem in Colorado. They don't have a number one that strikes fear in anyone. The Cubs have it. The Dodgers have it. Like I said, even the Brewers have it. I don't see it in Colorado.
I don't either. I really don't know where you turn to in a one-game playoff.
And it's very real. I mean, that's a possibility that the Rockies could be etched into a one-game playoff. It's possible. The way things are moving in the NL West, it's extremely possible that that could happen. So, as we close out this edition of the show, give it to me. Are they for real or not? Do the Rockies get to the postseason? Over the final 25 games, do the Rockies get into the postseason?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say the Dodgers win the division. I think Arizona is better than Colorado, too.
Statistically, ESPN gives the Dodgers an 83% chance to make the playoffs. They give the Rockies a 42.5% chance, and the Rockies currently have a half-game lead over the Dodgers with 24 games to go. That should tell you something. The Brewers, 87% chance. The Cardinals, 58% chance.
Yeah, Milwaukee and St. Louis, I would say, are better ball clubs than Colorado.
I think Atlanta's a better ball club than Colorado as well.
I think Philadelphia is on par with Colorado.
Give me the baby Braves. They've been fun to watch.
I know a team that's not good.
Who?
Cincinnati.
Surprise.
59-80. Two games and they're eliminated.
Out of time on the show today. Thank you to Coach Smith. It was great to talk with him and, of course, a member of his softball squad. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.